F.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up earlier this month, the trustees of the Social Security system released their annual report about the health of Social Security and Medicare, of the health of the trust funds. Trust funds that all of us workers pay into every month. Our guest is Max Richmond, who is president and CEO of the National Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. We're going to talk about those trust funds here on WMNF right now. Max, welcome back to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
So what did the trust funds trustees say about the health of Social Security?
Well, they issued their report, as they do every spring, late spring, and there's no change in the year that the Social Security program will be unable to pay full benefits unless something changes, and that year is 2034. So that has remained the same. And 2034, if there are no adjustments to the program, it will pay about 80% of the benefits that people would be getting. And that's unacceptable, I think, on the part of anybody that's involved in these issues, and especially beneficiaries. So that needs to be addressed.
2034. So I've heard some media outlets say by 2034, Social Security will be broke. Is that accurate?
Well, as I just said, in 2034, the program will, without any changes, which is not where we're at, would be able to pay 80% of what people should be getting. That is a far cry from being broke, and it's troubling that we keep hearing words like broke, bankrupt, because when younger people and older people hear that, they think the program's gone. It's gone off the cliff, and there's no money whatsoever. That's wrong. There is a solvency issue that needs to be addressed. We support some proposals that would address it in a fair and reasonable way. But to harp on the notion that the program would be broke and bankrupt really doesn't do any service to anybody.
Now, on the Medicare side, how long before Medicare starts to go into the red?
Well, again, the Medicare, there are several parts to Medicare. There's the Part B, which is paid for by premiums and government support. That's not an issue. It's Part A, which also is funded by a trust fund, and that's chiefly the hospital part. And that is, according to the same trustees, will be able to pay something, not much, but something less than full benefits in about 2029. So again, we're a national group. We're the second largest senior citizen lobbying group in the country. We don't have our heads buried in the sand. We know things have to be adjusted. And it is, after all, a dynamic program. It's been changed over time in terms of benefits and revenue. And we need to look at those issues. The revenue side should be focused on, we think, because the benefits are they're not lavish. Many people get by just on Social Security. And we need to look at some ways to bring more revenue into the program in a fair and responsible way.
I want to ask you about the tax bill that was passed earlier this year and signed by President Trump. Did that have a positive or negative effect on the Social Security Trust Fund?
Well, it's absolutely a negative effect. One of the reasons that the program will be having difficulties, and I speak now about the Medicare part, is and the Social Security to some extent. The tax bill affected the amount of taxes on Social Security benefits, and that when that was reduced, it affected the Medicare trust fund, because part of that tax on Social Security benefits is earmarked towards Medicare. and also Social Security. But, you know, Rob, the really concerning part of the tax bill for programs like Social Security and Medicare is that so many of the members of Congress, mainly Republican, who voted for that tax cut, had been railing against deficits for years, decades in some cases, and yet they voted for a bill that is going to add $1.5 trillion to the deficit. And we were concerned at that point that once that became law, those same members that supported it would start talking about the need to address this growing deficit, and they would look at Social Security and Medicare. And sure enough, within days of the signing the that tax bill into law, Speaker Ryan, one of your senators, Marco Rubio, started talking about, well, we can't live with these enormous deficits, and we've got to look at programs like Social Security and Medicare and trim them. So that's the other shoe that we feared would drop, and now it seems to be a reality.
Okay, I want to ask you how that's going to work out, but our guest is Max Richman, who's president and CEO of the National Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. And we're talking about the future of Social Security and Medicare on 88.5 FM. If you've got a question for Max, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. So Senator Rubio and others are suggesting cuts, but if Social Security is funded separately than the general budget, how could they suggest cuts to Social Security?
You know, I ask that question regularly, and I've never gotten a good answer, because Social Security is funded by a dedicated revenue stream. It's the FICA tax. It pays for benefits. Not only does it pay for benefits, it pays for most of the administration of the program, all the offices, computers, all the people that service seniors, help them navigate Social Security complexities. That's paid for out of the trust fund as well. So why in the world would we be looking at a program, cutting a program that is running a surplus? There's $2.9 trillion in this saved in the Social Security program, which will begin being drawn down as the baby boomers retire, and that trust fund will be used up in 2034. But this program has never added a penny to the deficit, and it's time that senators, including Senator Rubio, stopped looking at it as a piggy bank for some of the reckless tax cuts that have been enacted, particularly the one that passed very recently.
So they would take money from the Social Security Trust Fund and then put it into the General Revenue Fund of the federal government?
Well, they just wouldn't. They just would reduce the amount in the trust fund. If that happens, that 2034 year moves up maybe dramatically, and that plays right into, I believe, the interest of those who want to sow confusion and pessimism about the Social Security program, because then they'll be able to say, well, there's not enough money now even for the next couple of years, and we've got to privatize it. We've got to put that money into Wall Street. We've got to cut the benefits. We've got to cut the cost of living adjustment because we can't afford it. You know, I don't like to attribute motives to politicians, but it's pretty clear where this is all headed. And, you know, the time to stop it is in November, Election Day, people should be sure that they're voting for members that really support Social Security and Medicare. And I urge your listeners, when they go to town hall meetings or rallies with members of Congress or challengers, not to just walk away thinking when someone says, I'm for Social Security, because everybody's going to say that, virtually everybody. But the question is, how are you for it? Are you going to cut the benefits? Are you going to cut the cost of living adjustment? Are you going to raise the retirement age so that benefits by virtue of that would also be cut? So don't just accept I'm for it, because that's not a legitimate answer.
If the Social Security Trust Fund is solvent to the year 2034, and then it begins slowly to go into the red, what would you do to lengthen the solvency of Social Security?
Well, we support a number of pieces of legislation that are designed to bring more revenue into the program in a fair way. Right now, there's a cap on wages subject to the Social Security payroll tax, the FICA tax, and it's $128,400 in wages. After that, no more payroll tax. Why? Why should it stop there? What we have endorsed is a proposal by a Congressman John Larson of Connecticut. I think it has about 170 co-sponsors. There's a companion in the Senate, and it would commence the payroll tax again at $400,000 in wages. And that would bring enough money into the program it's called the Social Security 2100 Act, because that would bring enough money into the program to extend that solvency date till the year 2100. It would bring enough money into the program to raise the minimum benefit about $70 a month, which may not sound like a lot, but if you're living on Social Security or are almost entirely on the program, that makes a huge difference. It would change the way the cost of living adjustment is computed so it accurately reflects inflation's impact on an older person, resulting in a slightly higher COLA. And those people who would pay more, that make that much money, they would also get a boost in benefits when they start collecting. So I think it's a proposal that is reasonable, is fair, does not penalize people who depend on Social Security by reducing their benefits, and is a way to keep the program sound for a very long time.
You mentioned this, the bill has also been introduced in the Senate by Bernie Sanders, right?
Well, there's two bills. One is by Senator Bernie Sanders. That one, instead of the $400,000 figure, starts collecting again at $250,000. And there's a companion by Senator Blumenthal that tracks the one that Congressman Larson, that I just went through, has introduced. So there are a couple of different approaches. You know, the cap that's 128.4, that goes up a little bit every year based on a formula. So whatever the new cap, if it's 400,000 or 250,000, over time it'll disappear, because the cap that is on the books is increased every year, and it will eventually mean that there's no cap. It would take a while, but that's kind of what's in the plan behind these proposals.
I want to go to back to the tax bill for just a moment. When the tax bill was passed, I understand that it redefined some kinds of income for the wealthy so that they no longer had to pay Social Security tax on that income. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that some of that tax on Social Security benefits goes into the Medicare Part A trust fund, and that's one of the reasons that trust fund lost a few years of solvency.
Mm. Max Richmond is our guest. He's the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. It's a nonprofit based in Washington, D.C., and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I want to ask you about, there are more retirees and fewer workers these days. You know, one of our listeners sent me a note saying that there are 4 to 5 workers for every Social Security in the past. Now there's 2 to 3 workers for every Social Security worker in the past. Is that a problem?
Well, it's a short-term problem, but, you know, over time, I think that will level off. But it does add to the solvency. It's another dimension, another part of that equation, because fewer people are paying in. So, you know, to me, it just reinforces the argument of making an adjustment in the payroll tax. You know, the Social Security is an insurance program. In fact, FICA, which we're familiar with, stands for Federal Insurance Contribution Act. The payroll tax has remained the same since the early 1980s. Now, most insurance plans, I don't think anybody will find an insurance plan that has had a premium that hasn't changed in almost 40 years. So, you know, there's nothing unusual or remarkable about making some changes in the way the program is funded, as long as it's done with a lot of notice and in a fair way, which I think the proposal I outlined accomplishes.
Yeah, well, all the Western nations, all the developed nations, have seen a declining birth rate as more and more women begin to control and choose when they, have kids. So the U.S. birth rate is declining. What impact do you think the president's decisions on DACA and immigration, if he tries to, for instance, choke off immigration?
Well, that's such a good question. I have heard a lot of discussion about the positive aspects of immigration in terms of our labor force. Obviously, if you have more people coming to America, working, paying payroll taxes, you're going to boost the Social Security Trust Fund. There'll be more money coming in. As it is right now, often those people that can't get their papers in order, they may avoid paying payroll taxes because they're not on the books. Put them on the books. Make them citizens, and they would be required, and they would pay payroll taxes. Immigration is a plus for many things, but particularly programs like Social Security and Medicare.
Do you trust the trustees of the Social Security Trust Fund?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I want to go back to the trustees of the trust fund. Do you trust that they're giving accurate information?
Oh, yes, I do. I mean, these are cabinet secretaries, private citizens, the chief actuary, who is not a partisan individual. So I think those numbers are good. They've been relied on for decades, and they are the gold standards. No one really. I don't know of anybody that's questioning the legitimacy of those numbers from the trustees.
Who benefits? Let's say Social Security. The Social Security begins to go broke at a faster pace. Does somebody benefit? Do any organizations or businesses benefit?
I go back to not wanting to attribute motives, but if there is a lot of skepticism about the program, if people feel, I've heard comments like from younger people that I'm more likely to see a UFO than to get a Social Security check when I retire. That does not help restore the faith in the program. I mean, this is a program that has been around for 83 years. Anybody who has ever qualified for benefits, whether it's retirement, disability, survivor, children, about 3.5 million children get by in life because Social Security is there for them because they have a parent who died young or became disabled. So, you know, the skepticism surrounding some of these doom and gloom predictions will reduce the faith that people have in the program and will make the argument. I think it's designed to, you asked who benefits, we know Wall Street would love to get its hands on that $2.89 trillion, which would be a real tragedy. But when people start feeling that the program won't be there, they seem to be more, they find it appealing to privatize the program. And I say to them, look at what happened in 2008. If your Social Security had been in the stock market, and that's when you needed it, that's when you retired, you would have been out of luck. I know my 401k plan, I started calling it my 201k plan because it lost about half the value. So the beauty of Social Security is the program earns interest. The money that's paid in beyond what is needed every year to pay benefits goes into the trust fund. That money is used to buy government bonds. It earns interest. It's not the best interest in the world, but it has the full faith and credit of the U.S. government behind it, and it is sound. So I think those that would benefit from a privatized Social Security program that's invested in the stock market, whether they are fostering some of these doom and gloom predictions or not, they sure benefit from them.
Well, our guest is Max Richmond, who is president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. He's based in Washington, D.C. And if you've got a question for Max, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Balanced budget amendments. There have been a couple of attempts to pass a balanced budget amendment in Congress. And you talked about this Congress with the tax bill adding to the budget deficit. When we see a balanced budget amendment being debated or talked about in Congress, would that have any impact on Social Security recipients or Medicare recipients?
Absolutely. It goes back to the point you raised a few minutes ago of why are there efforts or plans to cut Social Security when it has its own revenue stream. A balanced budget amendment that includes Social Security, includes Medicare, and that's the proposals that I'm familiar with do, would require, if the budget isn't balanced, and we've seen how many years we've had now with deficits, if there would be cuts to Social Security and Medicare, even though Medicare Part A, the hospital part, and Social Security are funded through a dedicated tax, a dedicated revenue stream. So a balanced budget amendment, there may be some advantages, there may be some pluses for a balanced budget amendment, but it sure would devastate the Social Security program. It would not protect it from cuts. It would have them automatic if that balanced budget amendment passed the House and the Senate, ratified by I think it's 3/4 of the states, and that would be a devastating blow to Social Security and Medicare.
Max, do you have time to take a few phone calls?
Sure.
All right. Let's go to John in Port Richey. John and Max, if you get dropped, we're a little bit tenuous with our connection to you, but if you get dropped, I hope you can call us right back. But Max,
okay.
Max Richmond is here. He's the CEO of the Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. And let's go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on with Max Richmond. What's your question?
Hey. Oh, thanks for the show. Yeah, I agree with you about lifting the cap. I think a lot of people don't realize that it did have a cap where Medicaid and Medicare didn't. But also, what about expanding the revenue base to non-hourly employees or non-wages, such as like maybe putting a small fee on the financial transactions or capital gains, like expand it that way also?
Well, I've heard proposals like that, and they have some merit, but I feel that basing that revenue stream on wages has been pretty effective for all these years, for 83 years, and I think you'd raise a lot of concerns and political opposition if that were attempted. I see that it makes sense in some ways, but I think we'd be asking for another battle. And I figure if we can get the wage cap adjusted, that would be a huge accomplishment in and of itself.
Yeah, I could see that strategy. Go for that first, and then maybe I'm just wondering. I don't know the numbers that well like you do. if you raise that cap, would that be sufficient to go past the 2030, or maybe we need something a little
if
more?
We have supported eliminating the cap altogether. And again, going to the same logic that I just talked about, referring to investment or investment income instead of earned income, we would support eliminating it. Politically, that would be very difficult because there are people that make above 128.4, especially in cities like New York, Los Angeles. That is not a huge amount of money in some communities. So that's why we've endorsed keeping the cap at what it is. As I said, it changes a little bit every year, but commencing it again at $400,000. That, I mentioned earlier in the show, would bring in enough revenue to extend the solvency until the year 2100, okay, way beyond 2034, increase the minimum benefit about $70 a month, have a formula for determining the COLA that is more accurate and slightly more generous, and those people who would pay more, those making above 400,000 wages, would get a boost in their benefits. All that can be accomplished by bringing that amount of revenue into the program. And I think that's a fair approach.
Okay.
All right, John.
I'm surprised that so many people think that it does cost the government money when it doesn't. Thanks.
Thanks, John. And when you talk about that change to the cap on wages, that is the John Larson, the Democrat from Connecticut bill, Max?
Yes, that's it.
All right. Let's go to Wayne in Sarasota. Wayne, you're on. What's your question for Max Richmond?
Hello. I got on early disability, Social Security for my back, and I've been on it a couple of years, and my daughter noticed something the other day that I just thought, I think it's normal, but she said no question's a dumb question. So I'm on a VA. I'm also a vet, and I do all my medical and everything at the VA. And she said, well, why are they taking $200 out of your Social Security for Medicare? I got A and B. I never use it. I got the card and everything, but I'm on VA. She said, well, why are they taking money out if you're on VA? And I never thought of it.
Well, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know your specific circumstances, but if you're having with money withheld for your Medicare Part B premium from your Social Security check, I know you have to sign up for that. It doesn't happen automatically. So somewhere along the line, either there was a mistake made by somebody, maybe there's another reason, but you have to take an affirmative action and sign up for Medicare Part B, and then you would have that money taken out of your Social Security. So Part A is automatic, that's paid for by the trust fund, so you're not paying anything out of pocket in terms of a premium. But I would suggest you, you know, I don't know who your congressman is, but if there is an issue that if you never signed up and yet you're being docked a premium every month for Medicare Part B under your Social Security, that's something's wrong. And, you know, maybe your member of Congress can help you sort that out.
All right.
Okay, so there isn't an office like Social Security or my VA or somebody I can go to?
Well, there is. You know, you can go to your Social Security office and talk to, they handle Medicare as well.
Okay.
I know there's several probably in Sarasota. I think you get a much quicker reaction and response if you get your member of Congress to make a phone call or send a letter.
All right.
Okay, yeah, because everything happens so fast. I don't know. You know, I'm just signing so much stuff, it's hard to keep up with everything.
Yeah. All right. Wayne, good luck. Good luck with
your
member of Congress there. Let's go to Mike, who's in Asheville. Mike, what's your question for Max Richmond?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the work the man is doing. It is invaluable to me and to millions of people. But please, please reassess your opinion of the trustees. I've got a list right now of the seven spots for the trustees. Two are vacant. They're the public trustees. Trump has not named, or they have not been named since Obama was in office. The other five are cabinet members of Trump. So don't be naive. This is how they undermine and raid the trust fund, because these trustees, Stephen Mnuchin, Acosta, Azar, Nancy Berryhill, Mark Warshawski, these are all Trump people. The two that are supposed to look out for the for our best whatever are the public trustees, and they're not named.
Well, he's absolutely right. There are two vacancies, public trustees, and we have urged the administration to fill those vacancies. But I don't think I'm being naive. I think if the date, the 2034 date from last year, if all of a sudden it became 2024, I would say there's some political shenanigans going on.
Well, I
but I think that the fact that it has remained the constant, that the chief actuary testified before the House Ways and Means Committee and went through the process, I feel pretty confident that, yes, it is this cabinet. It's the secretary, the Treasury Secretary, the Labor Secretary, the Acting Commissioner of Social Security. But I personally feel that that is a good number. I don't question it based on the fact that the public trustees haven't been named. But at the same time, I do think it's very important that those public trustees be named as soon as possible.
Well, Rob, I have a quick follow-up.
Well, please go ahead, Mike.
Well, thank you. Sir, can you not see that this is a mechanism to raid the trust funds? That for the first time in over 30 years, money has been taken out of the trust fund recently. What is to stop the trustees from raiding the trust fund when they're all Trump appointees?
You know, Rob, I couldn't hear all of that question.
The caller says, what's to stop the trustees of the trust fund from raiding the trust fund because they're all Trump appointees?
And they've taken money recently from the fund.
Yeah. We've heard for years there's no money there. It's being spent for other purposes. They can't change. The law is clear. When more money is brought into the program than is needed to pay benefits each year, which has, by design, that was the plan in 1983, to build up a trust fund for the time now when the baby boomers start drawing on the program. That money is invested in government bonds, treasury bills. That money earns interest. That is paid back. That interest is paid back into the program. Here's a good clarifying example. In 2008 and 2009, because of the recession, because of very high unemployment, less money was paid in payroll taxes than was needed to pay full benefits. But guess what? Not only were full benefits paid, but money was added to the trust fund because of the interest that was paid on those bonds. So, you know, I know there's a lot of skepticism about government these days, and I share some of that. But you know, this is a program that I think, if it's going to be touched, it's going to have to be with the above board and in a clear way by members of Congress and the White House. So I'm not concerned about that issue that was the caller raised.
All right. Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks. You would expect that there would be a whistleblower if money was surreptitiously taken out of the trust fund. Somebody would blow the whistle, right?
Absolutely. That is, as I say, that this is not subject to any executive order by this president or any president. And the formula is baked into the law. That's the beauty of the program. It is has been protected because it is such a solid, clearly defined program with a defined revenue stream. We just have to, you know, make sure that whatever changes are made will be ones that are fair. You know, I worked on Capitol Hill. I was staff director of two U.S. Senate committees. Most federal programs have to come back to Congress periodically before the year's over because they've run out of money and ask for supplemental funding. That has never happened with Social Security. It has never happened because they have a dedicated revenue stream. They don't run out of money. If we make some changes that are the changes I've discussed in the next few years, the program will be sound well beyond the current date of 2034.
Max Richman is our guest. He's president and CEO of the National Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. And this emailer from Spring Hill, Matt, says, what about means testing Social Security? What do you think of that idea?
I think it's a terrible idea. Means testing means basing benefits on your financial situation. And if you are an older person and you've done well, then your benefits would be reduced. Think about it. Why would someone support a program that would result in eliminating or reducing benefits if you do well when you are a retiree? You know, the program is insurance for whatever happens, whether you do well, whether you're just above poverty level. That's the beauty of the program. And if you turn, you know, welfare is a means-tested program. There isn't a whole lot of support for different parts of the welfare system. But if you turn this program into a means-tested program and it becomes welfare or very similar to welfare, I think that kind of support, almost universal support, among Democrats, Republicans, Independents, they support the program because it's something you pay into. It's an earned benefit. It's not an entitlement. Welfare is an entitlement program, but Social Security and Medicare Part A, these are earned benefits. You're buying insurance while you're working. A third of Social Security benefits right now go to non-retired workers, survivors, spouses, disabled. As I mentioned, 3.5 million children get Social Security benefits. So you are buying insurance while you're working. For the time you retire, but also in the event something bad happens in the family and someone will inevitably say, you know, you ought to look into Social Security because there are benefits for survivors, for spouses, for children, for disabled. I think that changing it to a means-tested program is another way to make sure the program loses public support and eventually will see its demise.
Let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Elizabeth, you're on with Max Richman. We're talking about the future of Social Security and Medicare. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon. No, it's still morning, is it not? I have a question about Medicare. Occasionally one hears of Medicare fraud. In recent years, what I heard was Governor Scott's company was convicted of Medicare fraud. Is there any way that whatever the fraud is, money can be returned? Are there fines for these people who defraud Medicare? Does that money ever come back into the fund?
Oh, yes. There are some. There's many cases where fraud has been uncovered. People that have benefited from that fraud not only have to pay money back, but they have to pay penalties. Unfortunately, the program does experience fraud over time. I think the best monitors of fraud are Medicare beneficiaries. If you get a bill that doesn't look right, if you're charged an enormous amount for a procedure maybe that you didn't even have, you need to notify the Social Security Medicare office immediately because you're the first line of defense for that kind of fraud.
I have always questioned any claims that I might have in that regard. And
well, you're
just,
doing the right thing.
Well,
thank you.
It turned out that, of course, there was no fraud in that. It's just things have gone up, so.
Yeah, well, that may be, but I always urge people, if you have a question on your bill, even though you may not be paying it, some people might think, well, I'm not paying it, Medicare is paying it.
Oh.
But you'll be paying in the long run because fraud hurts the Medicare program, will hurt beneficiaries down the line.
Oh, no, I totally agree with that, and you're quite right. Everyone should look at any statement that they get.
Absolutely.
With those things. But what concerns me is companies. I don't know the amount of money that Mr. Scott's company got away with, but things like that, I want to make certain that that can at least be partially recovered. And I thank you very much for your program, Rob, and your answers, Mr.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth. By the way, PolitiFact has done really good work on this, and I don't have time to read the whole articles, or read all the articles, rather, about Governor Rick Scott and Medicare fraud, but they're on there. And you can find for yourself just the headline. Rick Scott did oversee the largest Medicare fraud in the nation's history. That was rated mostly true, that statement. And you can look that up yourself. We're talking with Max Richman, who is the president and CEO of the National Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. And Max, if you've got more time, we'll keep taking phone calls.
Well, I could. I'm going to have to be somewhere soon.
You want to take one more?
I could take one more.
All right.
If that suits you.
All right. Let's go to Brian in Tampa. Brian, what's your question for Max Richman?
Hey, Rob. Hey, Max. This is going to be an odd question, but Max, have you heard of the economic theory called modern monetary theory, and the specific economists Stephanie Kelton, Warren Mosler, and L. Randall Ray?
I'm having trouble hearing you, but I don't think so, no.
Yeah, he's wondering whether or not you've heard of modern monetary theory and the economist Stephanie Kelton.
I have not.
Okay, so Brian, just quickly, your point being?
Quickly is we're off the gold standard, and Social Security can be paid for directly with fiat currency, and it doesn't even depend on a trust fund. So progressives need to understand that and look it up, because we are going around in circles like a washing machine talking about this trust fund when we can have the federal government pay for Social Security to infinity.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments. Max, before you go, what's the best thing? If people want to see a sound future for Social Security and Medicare, what are the best things they can do?
Well, I would say one thing they could do is they could become part of our movement. We can be reached at we've got a great website. It's www.ncpssm.org. We've got also an 800 number, 1-800-966-1935. It's your Social Security became law, easy to remember, 1-800-966-1935. You can get information. We can connect, we can help connect people if they choose to be in touch with their senators and their members of Congress, and that can make a huge difference. And go to town hall meetings. When you hear that your congressman or senator is having a town hall meeting or a campaign event or having a tele-town hall meeting, I just did one yesterday with a congresswoman from Portland, Oregon, you know, be part of it. Ask questions. And again, don't just accept that when someone says, I'm for Social Security, because that's meaningless. What really will tell you where their positions are is, you know, what would you do? Are you for cutting benefits? Are you for bringing a little more revenue into the program in a fair way? Where are you at on that? That's the question to ask.
All right. Well, Max Richman, thanks a lot for coming back on WMNF.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Great to have you here. Max Richman is president and CEO of the nonprofit group, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and their website is ncpssm.org. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Janine writes, what about immigration reform? Janine writes, legal workers add to the program funds. I'm just going to read one of the groups, Social Security Works, issued a statement earlier this week, and I'm just going to read from their statement about immigration reform. And the head of Social Security Works writes this: immigration is a net plus for Social Security because immigrants are younger on average than other Americans. They will contribute to Social Security for decades. Ironically, undocumented workers contribute even more. They're prohibited from receiving Social Security even when they can prove that they have contributed. The Social Security Administration has estimated that undocumented workers pay billions of dollars to these programs each year but earn no benefits. If Trump and his GOP allies succeed in their plan of cutting in half the number of people illegally immigrating to this country, Social Security will lose $2.4 trillion in revenue over the next 75 years. That is money that will have to be found elsewhere. And you can find that on the Social Security Works website, which is another group that defends Social Security. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. Mark Biro is coming up in the next hour. He's coming back. If there's something that you want to discuss, we can talk about it. We can talk about rudeness in politics. We did that a little bit yesterday. But if there's something that you want to talk about, our phone number, 813-239-9663, our email address, dj@wmnf.org. Maxine Waters was on MSNBC last night. She has taken shots from conservatives over the past few days, and she took shots for this statement. We'll listen into this statement for just a moment.
I believe in peaceful, very peaceful protests. I have not called for the harm of anybody. This president has lied again when he's saying that I called for harm to anyone. I am having sleepless nights about the children, and really, I don't want to engage constantly with this lying president. This Don the Con man will say anything. He is the one that's responsible for promoting violence. If you take a look at some of the comments that he has made over a period of time, remember what he said when he said to someone, "I would like to punch him in the face"? Remember when he said to the crowd, "Knock the crap out of them"? Remember what the president said when he said, "Maybe he should have been roughed up"? And remember what he said when he said, "Oh, try not to hurt them. If you do, I'll defend you in court. Don't worry about this." This is the president of the United States who promotes violence, who support those who are practicing violence. And when he talks about any comment that I have made relative to these children, he's lying once again.
Well, that's California Congressman Maxine Waters, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, defending herself because conservatives have complained that they think that she was urging people to commit violence in her in a statement that she made earlier this week about the treatment of immigrant children. And our phone number is 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Not the quote. I was looking for the original quote that set this off, and wasn't able to pull it up in time. But if there's something that you want to talk about, we can talk about it. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And if there's an issue that you want to talk about, one of our conservative listeners wrote us this. Rob, I caught your news this morning at 6:30 and really had to laugh out loud. He writes, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who should be in jail for her antics at the DNC, visited facilities housing children that came across the border unaccompanied and then demanded that President Trump reunite these children with their families. I say, no problem. Stick their asses on a bus and send them back from whence they came. Poof. Reunited, signed Jeff in Newport Richey. So there's one of our conservative listeners saying that the way to solve the refugee crisis is just to put kids on the bus and send them back to their home countries, and that will reunite them with their parents. What do you think? 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. We're going to go to Marilyn in Tampa. Hi, Marilyn. What would you like to talk about?
Hi, Rob. I just want to make a comment about the Medicare Part B, the veteran who was thinking about dropping it.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law was a World War II vet, and when she moved to Tampa, she decided to drop her Part B because she was going to go to the VA here for all of her care. So she also had CHAMP VA as a supplement, and so she got her care at the VA. Unfortunately, she'd had a fall and ended up in a community hospital. Then she was transferred to rehab where she was for 8 months. And what we found out later was that because she didn't have Part B, CHAMP VA would not cover any of her medical bills. And she didn't have any prescription coverage. So we were close to between $70,000 and $80,000 out of pocket for that 8 months that
wow.
she was there just for her medical and her rehab. And so that's just something to consider if you're going to drop Part B, that if you go outside the VA system, you may not be covered except for hospital. And, you know, any physicians, any other things that you're getting outside the VA aren't going to be covered. And if you do have a supplemental, I would check with them, because with CHAMP VA, they would not cover her unless she had Part B.
All right. Well, that's good information. Thanks for letting us know.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Marilyn. Okay. That's good to know. Let's go to Barbara in Tampa. Barbara, you're on. What would you like to say? Hi, Barbara. You're on WMNF.
Hey, yeah, this is Bob in Tampa.
Oh, Bob, I'm sorry. You're certainly not a Barbara.
Thank you. While I was waiting, the woman covered an important part of the Part B. However, I don't know if she mentioned, if he wants to drop it, all he has to do is call Social Security, and he can fill out a form, and it's done.
Okay. Would you advise it? I mean, Marilyn thought it was not a good idea, just in case you had to go out.
Unless you're really, you know, I don't know what degree he's covered through the VA. He has to pay part of what, if he is covered by things that happened during the service, they'll take care of that with no problem. But things that aren't covered, he has to pay a portion. But it's a very small portion.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bob, thanks a lot. Sorry, I called you Barbara. Thanks. Thanks
a lot.
All right. Well, lots of calls for civility in politics. Let's listen in to how President Trump campaigned in 2016, how he won elected office. He won elected office by saying things like this.
If you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of them, would you? Seriously. Okay, just knock the hell. I promise you, I will pay for the legal fees, I promise.
The guards are very gentle with him. He's walking out like big high fives, smiling, laughing, like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
All right, yeah, get him out. Try not to hurt him. If you do, I'll defend you in court. Don't worry about it.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick... If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know.
President Trump campaigning in 2016 for the presidency. Back then, he was just Donald Trump, candidate for president. There are lots of talks, lots of talking today about how to restore civility in politics. And that, I'm sure, is going to be a topic here on WMNF for the next few weeks. How do we restore civility in politics? And where did this incivil nature come from? If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. You might hear that door rustling in the background, and that's Mark Bureau making his way into the studio. Mark is going to be on for the next hour on the Midpoint program. He's brought a pile of stuff with him, and he's wearing a spiffy new hat, too. Mark never wears a hat, or at least not this kind of hat. It's a pork pie hat. So Mark is going to be along in just a moment. This is WMNF Tampa, and thanks to Jan Simpson. She was our phone producer today. Let's get the latest news